The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Off we go into a new week. What a weekend. Wow. I mean, we could do an hour on the college football playoff, but instead we'll do about 20 minutes with John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, Across the Fruited Plain, none better. John covering the college football scene in the Pac-12. Pac-12 is right in the middle of all this stuff. And of course, John, a national voter on the Heisman Trophy, as am I. I submitted my Heisman Trophy ballot yesterday, as did John. We can't tell you who we voted for, but we're going to get into the college football playoff. The end of the Pac-12 was just, it just blows. I mean, just, if you think about where we are today, where this conference a year ago, this conference was being made fun of because the officiating was bad. It was bad all the way to the end, just so we're really clear about that. But we just finished the greatest season of Pac-12 football, and now it's gone. Like, what are these people thinking? So I want to talk to John about that. Florida State, obviously, in the college football playoff. If you haven't heard, gone in depth on that. We'll talk with John there. And much more with John Wilner and Wilner Hotline. Tomorrow night is one of the biggest college basketball games of the year in the Valley. Grand Canyon University, who won the WAC tournament last year, went to the NCAA tournament. They have the toughest college basketball environment. This isn't me saying it. It's several national outlets. GCU is hosting national champion runner-up San Diego State tomorrow night. I'm going to be there. They're already camping out. The Havocs are. The game's on ESPN. It's just the thing, the place. So I'm going to give you a double barrel preview on it. Paul Coro does the analysis for Grand Canyon University on their radio side. Of course, Paul, well-regarded, well-respected in the Valley through many years. Paul Coro will be with us. And then John Quintera, the coach from San Diego. Give us a view of San Diego State. What's going on with Brian Dutcher's squad coming over here for tomorrow night? I'm completely geeked up about that. Looking forward to being a hoopaholic. That'll be tomorrow night. So Wilner, Coro, Quintera, it sounds like a law firm. Big-time guys in my world. I appreciate them. They'll be with me on today's show. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always, that is Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate Jeff Mishi and their long, ongoing support. The Cardinal game yesterday took forever, but it was fine. I would have to say, if we're talking about Arizona Cardinal football over the last few years, which there's not been much on the field good to talk about, there's been more off the field that's been even worse, that yesterday would have to be a highlight if we're just talking football. I would love to get back to just talking about the coach, the general manager, and the players. I don't need to mention the owner at all. The best owners are the ones that are out of sight. Yesterday was fun. I mean, you can't script James Conner going back to Pittsburgh, where he grew up in Erie, and he's going against his former team and he scores twice. That was a beatdown yesterday. Like, that's one of those games you look at and say, wow, did some things finally click? And sure, it helped that the defense was able to knock Kenny Pickett, the quarterback of the Steelers, out of the game. It helped. But you have to have a 30-minute and a 53-minute delay. You have every reason to fly cross country when you're out of the playoff race just to say, man, I'm on my iPad figuring out if my U-Haul is going to be ready to go here in 3 weeks. There's every reason for them to not be focused. And instead, Jonathan Gannon had his team ready to play yesterday. And they just took it to Pittsburgh, just beat the snot out of them. That's as impressive a win as I can't remember the last time where they just, the Dallas game earlier this season, early season NFL football just isn't what it used to be. Anybody who tries to tell you that is just not paying attention. This is a time of year where the Steelers are trying to go for a playoff spot, and the Cardinals just walked in there and beat them up. That's impressive. Easily the most impressive win of the season. Their first road win of the season. And they're coming into a bye week. And then they have the 49ers here. That's interesting. I'm interested, even though the team is not going anywhere this year, I do want to see how they finish. I think there's something to that in the NFL. I do. Some sports you look at and it's, well, they finished really strong down the stretch. They can take that into the offseason and feel really good about it. They may have been playing teams that are resting their players. They may have gotten a spot in the schedule that's bad. Okay? The NFL, for everything against the NFL that I see at times, Other than if it's the final week of the season and a team is resting all their players because they have the playoff spots sewed up, that's one thing. But it's usually pretty straight up and pretty fair when it comes to judging a team down the stretch and getting a view of your players. Like, I didn't think Kyler Murray was very good yesterday early, but at one point they converted 9 of 11 third downs. That's not against a good team. Against a good team. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited about them today. I went to the Fiesta Bowl offices yesterday for, you know, to be around them and see the excitement. I got there, the door was locked. The girl at the front desk let me in. I walked in about 11:45 for a 12:30 event. Sat there. They had some cookies and some chips out. And they had the ESPN broadcast on. And that was it. There was no podium set up. There was no other media that was there. There was nothing. And I'm like, am I in the right place? And I have to be at ASU basketball because I can be wherever I want to be because I'm the owner of this. And I wanted to see ASU against USF. I drove to Scottsdale to make sure that we were in front of the Fiesta Bowl to hear what they had to say. I knew it wasn't going to be, you know, the national championship game, but I figured they'd get a good matchup. They didn't. Liberty's an interesting story. If you didn't hear, Liberty's playing Oregon. Liberty's playing Oregon. Oregon, their players going to the NFL have no reason to play in this game. Liberty has every reason to be excited, and they should be, but they're not going to draw 70,000 fans. And so it's a tough, I mean, to say it's tough, that's an understatement. So it comes to 12:30. This is when I was told by an email that was sent that they would speak. That didn't happen. 12:45, 1 o'clock, 1:15, 1:30, I said, I'm gone. I'm out. So, you know, the college football playoff, if you don't think that television had a little bit to do, in the grand scheme of things, I think if Mike Norvell just lies, I'm not telling him to lie, but if he just says, yeah, Jordan Travis's knee, it's a little bruised, but he's going to be fine. He may not be fine down the road. He had a setback, but because Mike Norvell was flat honest, which I appreciate in this business, but it just comes down to this. I think if Mike Norvell says Jordan Travis is going to be able to play, Florida State probably makes it. I could be wrong on that. I still think just because Alabama beat Georgia head-to-head in a close game, that doesn't mean that Alabama should jump over everybody. But, of course, they did because they're Alabama. It's TV ratings. That's what it is. That's what it is. When they say it's the four best teams, like I think Washington playing Texas, we're going to talk to Wilner about this, that's a really hard deal for Washington. It's not because it's Texas is that much better. They may be. The game is basically a home game for Texas. It's not for Washington. And the Rose Bowl comes out smelling like a rose. Yeah, Michigan, Alabama. What a great Rose Bowl. Oh, my gosh. Great Rose Bowl. The winter baseball meetings are this week. I'm expecting the Diamondbacks. They already made one really good trade for a third baseman. Expect them to try to get a few arms. Would I be disappointed if they didn't get in on Yamamoto? I would be. I'd at least make a call. You have to at least make a call on Ohtani. You're not going to get Ohtani in all likelihood, but you just don't know. You don't know if there's a connection of somebody somewhere. And I'm sure the Diamondbacks have done this. When people say, oh, that'll never happen. Like I got burned last week by a few of, well, why? That's the most ridiculous thing that Greg Byrne, the AD, and it. I don't know. He was at ASU, was part of the Fiesta Bowl. Went to U of A, he's at Alabama, he's in the middle of it all, Nick's going to retire eventually. All you have to do is pick up the phone and say, are you happy? What's going on? We're in this AD search, or even, hey, do you have some people under your tree? If you don't pick up the phone and call Greg Byrne, which my understanding is it's a search firm for ASU and their athletic department. So if you don't pick up the phone and call, and that's how it is on the baseball side. If you don't at least pick up the phone and call, then you should be fired. I'm never one of those say, oh, well, we're just not big enough. Oh, man, I'm just not like I'm not wired that way. And the best ones that I've covered in sports through the years, the best executives, are not wired that way either. They don't give up. They get after it. So winter baseball meetings, if it's they made a phone call on Yamamoto, they spoke with his representatives, and it didn't work out, fine. I'm good with that. I'm good with that. I don't want to be the Kansas City Royals where they say, well, we're just never going to be able to attract that type of player. I don't want to be the Oakland / Las Vegas A's, which that'll change when they go to Vegas. But, well, we just can't attract that type of player. You don't know where the connection's going to be, is my point. Northern Arizona hired an interesting football coach. Interesting to me is his name's Brian Wright. I don't know anything about him, but you go to Pittsburgh State in Kansas to hire your next football coach. That is out of the box. A lot of people in the state were saying they need to go hire somebody that is on Arizona State staff or a high school coach who's emerged to the next level. And they didn't. They went a different direction. And, of course, GCU, San Diego State tomorrow night, looking forward to that. U of A should probably be number one in the polls today in college basketball, which is a great achievement for them. And that's that. Wilner is next as we go through the college football playoff, what happened, our weekly segment with John Wilner, the bowl season, the Pac-12 implosion, and much more. That's next. All right, before we get started, I want to talk about Goodwill. Once again, it's on my heart, near and dear to my heart, because as empty nesters, just becoming empty nesters, around the house, I find shoes. I find gloves and bats and stuff from four kids through the years that we just said, at some point, we'll donate it. We'll donate it to the school. We'll donate it here. And I just told my wife, it's just time to donate them to Goodwill. Look, it's gently used items that are still in wrestling shoes that fit big kids. My son was bigger than me, or is bigger than me, and 6'7", big wrestling shoes. It's something that a kid may need. Our daughters, their cleats when they were 8, 9, 10, and they barely use them, okay? That's what we're talking about here with Goodwill, and it's the right thing to do within your community. Think of community. Someone like myself who grew up as a single parent home, and my mom had to find ways, some way, somehow, to get me through the sporting world. And she did so by people helping her out. That's what you do at Goodwill. There's a Goodwill near you. Just simply go to goodwillaz.org. That's goodwillaz.org. You know, for me, I've driven by, just pulled right up, whether it's gently used furniture or, again, that sporting equipment, and dropped it off. I've got one about a mile and a half from me here in the Southeast Valley. On our way to church on Sunday mornings, I'll drive by one, and about 3 miles down the road towards the freeway in the Southeast Valley. But they're all around you, over 100 locations. That is Goodwill. Think of Goodwill. All right, as promised, and as the day and the weekend was unfolding, I'm thinking, I'm going to need to let John know that I need an hour to go through all this stuff. As it was progressing, it was pretty clear that, okay, we're going to have not organized chaos. We're going to have mass chaos. And not just around the college football playoff either. The portal is open, and there's already big movements that's made taken place. We actually have a team in the CFP. But I want to start with John Wilner, of course. Wilner Hotline, you can find his content on sports360az.com and across the Fruited Plain. Follow him on Wilner Hotline. He gets the job done inside and out on the college football scene. If you and I were sitting together on December 4th of 2022, and I said, hey, John, next year the Pac-12 won't even exist, and by the time we talk a year later, and there's going to be two Heisman Trophy candidates, and... by the way, Oregon State and Washington State are going to be on an island trying to figure things out. Would you have even believed any of that? Would any of that have seemed remotely possible?
Yeah, oh, sure. I mean, as soon as USC and UCLA left, the Pac-12 entered, and that was June 30th, 2022, Pac-12 entered an existential crisis. And there was never, it was never guaranteed the conference was going to survive intact with the remaining 10 schools until they got a media deal done. A year ago now, they had missed a window to get a deal secured before the economy started to turn. And they entered like a winter of uncertainty. And at this point, I did a point spread to try to give people a visual to figure out, all right, what's the situation here? And I think about a year ago, I probably had survival as about a 5-point favorite over extinction. And that's not that much, right? If you see a five point betting line on a football game, you figure it's going to be close. They were waiting out the UCLA issue with the Regents to see if the Bruins would be forced back. That was always a long shot. I don't know that I would have, I wouldn't have bet on it, but it certainly was a possibility. I don't know that I would have necessarily thought Washington State and Oregon State were in this particular situation where they're scrambling for a home. My guess is I would have felt like they had already entered the Mountain West as a life raft. And the Heisman thing, certainly that hinged on whether the top quarterbacks were going to return to school or enter the draft. And the, I think it was the early mid-December is when Bo Nix and Michael Penix decided they were going to come back. And at that point, the conference, everything took a turn for the better on the field, right? You knew there were going to be some really good teams. And the season played out exactly as we thought. To me, that's one of the biggest developments, is that the Pac-12 was as good as anticipated on the field. Heisman candidates, playoff candidates, top 25 teams. It matched the expectations, which isn't always easy to do for a conference.
Behind the scenes, you're a veteran reporter. You do your job and you keep your sources close to the vest, as veteran reporters do. But I'm wondering if you can just pull the curtain back without revealing anybody. Have you had conversations with those, not just in the athletic side, but at the higher education side, that have said, what the bleep were we thinking? Like, they already have seen it. You wrote a cool column. I'll direct people to go see. Whether or not it's on Sports 360 doesn't matter to me. Just find Wilner's content. It is about the, you think that in 2033, this whole thing could get back together, right? Or you'd like to see it get back together. And so, two-part question. One is, have you had people already saying buyer's remorse? And do you really believe this could get all put back together somewhere way down the line?
Well, buyer's remorse, yes. I mean, nobody wanted this to happen, right? All the schools wanted to stick together. I mean, if you kind of put USC and UCLA in a different bucket and just focus on the 10, you know, Colorado's the only one that I think is eager about the new situation. Everybody else is like, we didn't want this to happen, but we didn't have a choice. Mm-hmm. And they wish it had turned out differently.
And you say they didn't have a choice. Did they have a choice? But it was just, there was a commissioner that was asleep at the switch who kept saying, we'll get to it, we'll get to it, we'll get to it. I mean, they did have a choice. Because if you look at what, from when you and I were sitting together at Pac-12 Media Day, and there was a commissioner there that we've not heard from since he was buried, his conference blew up, they had a choice, didn't they, John?
Well, they had a choice that they thought wasn't a good, was a bad, bad option. I mean, really, it came down to August 4th. They were set to sign a deal, and Washington and Oregon said, you know what? Is dealing good enough? We're going to the Big Ten. And then Arizona State, Utah decided, well, if the Washington and Oregon are gone, there's no conference, viable conference left, so we're going to leave. That's kind of the detail on what happened. But if you take it to the 40,000-foot mark, this was all the result of terrible management by the presidents and by the two commissioners, Larry Scott and George Kliakoff, over the course of many years that set the conference on this road. There were off ramps before they got to the edge of the cliff. Every time they decided not to take an off ramp. I equate it to, you're flipping a coin. It is hard to kill a 108-year-old institution of college sports that has produced Jackie Robinson and Arthur Ashe and Phil Mickelson. I mean, you go down the list, right? It's unbelievable. Elite academic schools.
Jackie Joyner, Kersey, Bill, I mean, Danny Meyer,
Drysdale. UCLA basketball dynasty, USC football. It's hard to kill that.
Daryl Miller, yeah, sure.
Yeah, unless you flip a coin 10 times and every single time it comes up tails. All you need is one heads, and yet every single time the Pac-12 presidents and commissioners were faced with a key strategic decision, they made the wrong one. It's almost unfathomable, and yet they did it. It took years, and it wasn't one or two people, and that ended up sending them down this cliff that they got to on August 4th. That's the best way to describe it. Series of terrible strategic decisions. So when you ask, do they have a choice? They did and they didn't.
But that, okay, so you and I are sitting here on December 4th. All right, 4 months later, did they look back and say, man, I got right to the edge. I put a leg up in the air that I was going to jump and I shouldn't have just some. And 4 months later, they say, "What?" Because I gotta believe there's some people in the rooms around all these campuses that are saying, "We just finished our biggest revenue generators, greatest season ever, and now we're going to go put our athletes out there in places like Rutgers and, you know, Maryland." Yeah. Just like, what did we, why?
Well, no, I don't think, I get what you're saying. And I think that, sure, if they had had their druthers, and I mentioned this the other day on social media, if they had their druthers, they could have waited on the media deal. Yes. And they could have, you know what, let's bet on ourselves and let's see what happens in the football. We're going to have a great football season. Let's hold off and let's wait until the winter when we're going to have a lot more leverage because we're going to have all these playoff contenders and we're going to have great, the best TV ratings we've ever had. Yep. And we got Deion Sanders and we got Washington and Oregon and Caleb Williams. But that was not a viable decision for them because the trust and the leadership had broken down. So they were not in a position to make that decision at a reasonable level. Yeah, ideally they would have waited. And right now they'd be in great shape because a lot of TV networks would love to sign the Pac-12 given the metrics and the trajectory. But they couldn't get to the point where that was a viable choice because so many things had broken down along the way, and they didn't trust the commissioner and they didn't trust each other. And it's such a complicated issue, but yeah, sure. Ideally they would have waited. Now, is anybody saying right now, doggone it, we should have taken the deal that was in front of us in August? No, I don't think that's the case, yeah. But are they saying, man, I wish it had been different so that we could have signed a deal now?
Right.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah, because I can't wait for that Titanic UCF ASU football game. When the Sun Devils play Cincinnati, it's going to be outstanding rather than playing Oregon.
I know. Absolutely. And there's a lot of campuses that are facing that situation. There's no question about it. But they didn't have a choice at the time. They had to make the choice, I guess, is the best way to say it.
Yeah. Are you like, Brad, why are we even going down this path?
No. I think a lot of fans...
Today's the day to do it.
I think a lot of fans are just feeling like, God, I can't believe there's no more Pac-12 football. What a waste. And that's the thing. It didn't have to come to this. But the leadership from the presidents and the commissioners was terrible. And the presidents ultimately are the ones responsible, right? If you're breaking it down, the presidents get 51% of the blame here. The two commissioners get the other 49. The president's terrible leadership, arrogance, ignorance, apathy, all those things over the course of 10 or 12 years, but especially in the last five, we could do an entire show about the strategic mistakes that have been made in the last 5 or 6 years that led to this point. I think it's endlessly fascinating, and I think fans are feeling it and talking about it because they need to for in some ways for a healing and recovery process, right? You gotta think it through because it is over. It's over. The sport that we've all grown up with, that all these alumni have grown up with, is gone.
Yeah. So when Oregon is playing Indiana in football rather than playing Utah, you know, those are the types of things that anyways.
Now, but you also asked.
Yeah.
Could it reform, right? And I did. I wrote a huge article.
It was great.
Thank you. I envisioned Pac-14 football in December of 2033. And how do we get to that road where the conference reforms? And I think that there's a very good chance that college football is going to undergo a massive change in 6 or 8 years because of things that have nothing to do with football itself, but are economic decisions that forced the schools into a space where they have to cut Olympic sports, and there's all this financial pressure. And what comes out of it is a super league of about 24 teams. In my opinion, USC, Washington, Oregon would be in that super league. Mm-hmm. Everybody else has kind of reformed along regional lines. And the Pac-14 includes the Arizona schools, and Utah and BYU, Washington State, Oregon State, Stanford, Cal, and the best schools in the Mountain West, and there's a Pac-14. There's also going to be a reformed Big 12 and a reformed ACC and some kind of reformed Big 10. All the heavyweight schools are going to be in a separate entity that's going to be fronted by private equity money that's going to have a mini NFL schedule. And that's the only economic end to what's going to happen to college sports. It's the only viable economic end to what's going to happen to college sports in the next 6-8 years.
John Wilner with us, Wilner Hotline. If Mike Norvell simply says Jordan Travis tweaked his body and we expect him back in a week or so, are you and I having this discussion today? this television network's what this to me seems television network's 101 saying the hell we're going to put on a team with a backup quarterback in prime time and pay him all this money. The committee can say anything they want to say, John, but to think that the TV executives don't have some little bit of influence, I'm sorry. I'm not even being cynical on that. It's just a fact. If coach just lies about Jordan Travis's situation, I think they're in.
They might be. I mean, the committee would do some digging, though. And the bookies would also be doing their digging. Nobody knows the injury situation better than the bookies. And I think that it would be hard for Oregon State or for Florida State to hide a season-ending injury to their quarterback. But your point is well taken. Should that injury have prevented Florida State from being in the playoff? And there's a great case to make that they should be in, right? Sure. And there's a great case to make that the TV influence is there. Now, I don't think it's as overt as, geez, we're going to put Florida State in. ESPN on line one, do not put Florida State in. All right, let's go with Alabama. I don't think it's quite that overt, but certainly the committee are there thinking about the bigger picture of the what's best for the college football playoff. And the best product generates the best ratings. And are you going to get the best product if you've got Alabama or if you've got a Florida State team that's currently playing a third string quarterback and barely beat Utah? Now, you could also say that right now, Alabama is better than Florida State. Alabama just beat the number one team in its backyard, right?
Right.
So it gets back to the point, who are the best teams or who are the most deserving? And the committee has made it clear that they want the best teams. And the other thing I'll make before we move off this topic, this is a result of a flawed system in which there are four spots for five conference champions. Yeah. The reason we have not had this kind of controversy before, because the Pac-12 has so infrequently produced a viable conference champion, right? If Washington and Utah and Oregon aren't in this thing, it's easy. And there have been many years, six of them, in fact, where the Pac-12 didn't have a viable team. And so you had four conferences for four spots. That this would never happen because the Pac-12 wasn't a factor. And you look back, when was the other major controversy for who got in? It was the first year, 2014. And guess what? The Pac-12 had a team, Oregon, in it that year. So it made for a logjam of five leagues, four spots.
It's really something just on how it's all transpired. And then I'm at the Fiesta Bowl offices yesterday. And
oh, my God.
Yeah. And they're trying
to. It's like nuclear holocaust right there.
Yeah. I can't even put it into words. But, of course, they're going to say this is the greatest thing ever. And, of course, you guys should talk about how great this game's going to be. And, you know, it's a nice story with Liberty, but that's about the end of it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and, you know, how many players are going to play for Oregon? I think you had the word of zero, maybe. I don't know.
Anybody who's eligible to go to the draft and skip the bowl is going to do it. I mean, why would you play? It's not Oregon's fault. I feel terrible for Oregon fans. It's not the Fiesta Bowl's fault. I feel bad for the Fiesta Bowl organizers. But, I mean, they're going to be, I would imagine, be an hour before kickoff, tickets on StubHub are going to be 37 cents.
Yeah. Yeah, and SMU is sitting there saying, why not us? And so,
well, and that's a whole other issue with the committee, right? Liberty played the worst schedule in captivity. Right. SMU beat a ranked opponent to win their conference championship, and they didn't get in. And you could argue the committee's decision with Liberty versus SMU was as bad or worse than the decision with Alabama versus Florida State. Well, I mean, it's just unbelievable.
For us, we sit here and we're just like, oh, I could do weeks of shows on this. A couple of weeks things to get out of here. John Wilner with us. Washington going to win it or not?
No, I think Washington's got a big problem with Texas. It's a road game for the Huskies.
Yeah, it is.
That's a whole other deal, right? You're the number two seed, and you're basically playing a road game. It's a drive from Austin to New Orleans, right? That stadium is going to be three quarters burnt orange, and that's not a great reward for the number two seed. But the system, again, four teams, two games. You have to protect the number one. Michigan, they couldn't send Michigan to New Orleans to play Alabama, right? Because that is a huge road game for Michigan.
Right.
So they get sent to Pasadena to play Alabama. Well, that leaves Washington's got to go to New Orleans. And I wrote about this over the weekend, Washington would have been better off getting dropped from 2-4 and playing Michigan in the Rose Bowl than going to New Orleans to play Texas.
Heisman, you can't say who you voted for. I can't say who I voted for. You've turned your ballot in, I'm assuming?
I did last night, yes. And it was, I had been thinking about it for a few weeks. I don't know about you. So it was pretty easy decision.
I struggled with, I'll just be transparent. There was a wide receiver that I was looking at one point, but that was way down during the regular season.
Yeah.
It came down to three quarterbacks, and you just had to look at all three quarterbacks and see what the body of work was about. One of the quarterbacks I know very well because he was here at Arizona State. Now, I'm not going to say who it was, but you guys did the math.
I'd like some pizza. Have you ever had pizza with that quarterback?
There was a famous brand in Tempe with the Netsies. Anyways, I can't say who I voted for. Neither can John. We don't want to get in trouble. But
I will say that I know where you're going. If you're asking me who are the best players in the country, pound for pound, the best football players in the country, I would name two guys that aren't quarterbacks. Mm. One is an Ohio State receiver. The other is a Georgia tight end who was hurt for 3 or 4 weeks. He's the best player. But because he was hurt, I didn't think about voting for him.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that. I appreciate your time and insight. As always, have a great week.
Thanks a lot, Brad.
There's John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. Make sure you find his content on the site and you follow John on his social media platforms, a trusted voice on the college football, basketball scene. And we're back with more after this timeout. As promised, Paul Coro, long time, well-regarded, well-respected voice in the Valley. He is the analyst on the radio side. You can hear 1580 AM, The Fanatic, and their affiliated stations with Grand Canyon University, much anticipated, I think, tomorrow night on campus against the defending national champion runner-ups, San Diego State Aztecs. And Paul has been with the team all season long. You're 80 in KenPom. You've got some new faces. I saw you at media the first practice, I think it was. And so what do you make out of the team early on this season, Paul, coming into this titanic matchup tomorrow night?
Yeah, everybody has been looking forward to this game for a long time, and Bryce Drew's done a good job of getting tunnel vision on these guys to get off to this 6-1 start. Only loss is to undefeated South Carolina. And in addition to that, KenPom net rating just came out and GCU is 58. And that's the highest the program's been. You just consider 362 programs in the nation and how far the Lopes have already come in, the 11th year of Division I basketball. Pretty impressive. And this is, I think, their most talented team. There's some familiar names back from the tournament team, and Gabe McLaughlin, Ray Harrison was preseason player of the year in the WAC, but then they hit the portal hard and really well and have unearthed some big time talents that feature in Tyon Grant Foster, who's a great story and has already cracked the top 10 in the nation in scoring.
Is this, this is right there to me, throw it at you. This is right there with when Louisville came to town. This is right there with when Arizona State played the first game over there. This has got to be one of the top three, four games, regardless of the outcome, just anticipation in the history of GCU hoops in this new era, right?
Oh, yeah, because at that time in the program, it was a little easier to get those teams to come visit. GCU wasn't as threatening to them to come do that. And a Louisville or an ASU or what have you. It's been harder. Illinois came, and
that's true.
This is different. You know, now you, everybody knows what you're walking into at GCU Arena. The biggest party in college basketball has been kind of become the trademark name of the venue. And, you know, the other night after the Lopes had won Saturday night against UT Arlington, immediately Havocs were camping out for the San Diego State. Like, we walked out of the arena after getting done with work, and there were 12, 15 tents already out, pitched out on the quad in front of the arena. So that's the kind of buzz this game was getting already.
That's awesome. And it's on ESPNU. I'm not want to take away from your broadcast. It's on ESPNU. Actually, the next two games I read are on ESPNU. So I'm wondering, is this ESPN's test of the facility, saying, hey, we better start doing more because we know the fan base there is going to draw eyeballs? Is there some business side to this, Paul?
I think it's just program stature as much as anything. You know, they just had two CBS Sports Network games at Desert Diamond Arena for that Arizona tip-off event. You know, this year is the most national TV games that they've had. Certainly the venue's been in high pro. The last time the Final Four was in town, the three-point contest and slam dunk contest were on ESPN from the arena. So they know what it brings as far as atmosphere. And every time WAC games are selected for ESPN, GCU's been a part of that mix every time, and they're home games because that's what makes good television. They're just the atmosphere there, let alone the high quality program. But people are seeing something unique in the stands with the way the students bring it. The other night was a Christmas theme, and if you weren't in the Christmas mood yet, all that red and green and Grinches and elves and such dressed up in the student section would put you there.
Paul Coral with us for a couple of minutes. You can hear him tomorrow night with Michael Potter as they do the play-by-play of GCU at home against defending national champion runner-up San Diego State. Much anticipated, huge college basketball game right here in the Valley. He joins us for a couple of minutes. I saw your game the other night just from a box score standpoint down in Texas. It was like 71 free throws or some an insane number.
Yeah.
Talking to people over at San Diego State, they muck it up. Talk to some people in the officiating world. They said GCU is really physical. What do you look at tomorrow night in this game? Is this a muck up game? Is this a game that if it's in the 50s and 60s, it's better for GCU, or is it better for San Diego State? What do you think?
Well, GCU is still kind of trying to figure out its identity. I mean, most of the rotation is new, even though you have star players like Ray Harrison and Gabe McLaughlin returning. Javon Blackshear Jr. hasn't even joined this team yet. That's an all-WAC first-team player who is a four-year starter, and he's still coming back from ACL, and he's yet to fit in this mold. But part of what they do, they didn't love, you know, having a game with 54 fouls called. Nobody wants to be a part of that, watching it or playing in it.
Or broadcast.
No. But it is indicative that the Lopes, like you said, are a more aggressive physical team. And they have guys who can draw fouls. And they're third in the nation for getting to the free throw line. That's because they initiate more now. And they have slashers and playmakers, and they get up and down more than they have in the past. And, you know, Tyon Grant Foster maybe not be such a secret anymore. His story is starting to come out a little bit more. He was out of college basketball for 2 years because of a heart condition at DePaul. Had to get cleared. He initially started at KU. Mm-hmm. And he's just an incredible talent. He's still, you know, figuring out just how to play. But, you know, he's producing 22 points a game, and he can shoot, he can run, he's 6'7". He made a steal the other night that sealed the game. A guy just tried to throw an outlet pass for a tying three, and he just went up and snatched it. And there's not too many 6'7" guards in the nation that can do stuff like that.
That's really good stuff. I'll let you go off that. I'll see you tomorrow night at the arena. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Brad.
There's Paul Coro. And again, you can hear his part of the broadcast. He's the color analyst for GCU basketball with Michael Potter over on 1580 The Fanatic and their affiliated stations. The game is tomorrow night at GCU. We will be there as well. And we're back with more after this timeout. All right, I needed a trusted voice. I needed a longtime trusted friend to fill me on exactly what Grand Canyon is facing tomorrow night in the runner-up to the national championship, San Diego State Aztecs, who are on the basketball court tomorrow night at GCU. He is John Quintero. He is the coach, 97.3. People say, oh, it's so great to see the two of you back together again. I'll get a lot of those emails. First, I want to start with Juan Soto. I'll get over to the game, but are you guys going to drop the bomb on the thing in San Diego? The winter meetings are here, John. What's going on with Soto as we speak?
Well, I think, Brad, more than anything else, the Padres, they need to cut back payroll. They were at about $256 last year. They'd like to get down to $200 million, but they're not going to be able to do that. They've got way too many needs. Juan Soto projected an arbitration to get about $33 million. Padres probably not going to be able to sign him past this year. You know, he's going to get a mega contract. So, you know, if the Padres were able to move him, that would open up about probably between $40 and $50 million for them to spend during free agency. You got to remember, they got to replace three starters. They got to replace their closer. They need to upgrade center field. They've got to find a backup catcher. And, you know, even with $40 or $50 million, it's going to be hard to answer all those questions. But I don't think it's a question whether or not Soto's going to be moved. I think it's going to be a question of where does he go.
Are you confident, John, having grown up there, lived there, seen the thing through the years, the late Peter Seidler, who you admired greatly, Bomell getting run out of town, basically, are you confident they can get this thing turned around here in this offseason?
It's going to be really hard, Brad. I mean, I think, what Arizona did this past year, and they're not going away. And I thought the trade they made a week ago or so with Seattle to get Eugenio Suarez, that's going to add a lot of power to that lineup. I mean, that guy's going to hit 28, 30 home runs pretty much every year. His average sometimes will drive you a little bit crazy, but he's a good, solid major league player with some pop. Dodgers will probably be predicted, as usual, to win the division. So right now, the Padres, from a year ago, people had them winning the division, winning the World Series. We're going to have that big parade on Harbor Drive. Right now, we're probably thinking the Padres are going to be predicted to come in third. They got a lot of work to do. They didn't handle the bullseye on their back very well last year, and everybody jumps up and down and clicks their heels about what they did late in the year. You know, the final part of the year, they went 16-2. But 16-2 and was against teams under 500, and the nine games they had against teams that were over 500, they went 4-5. So, you know, they got a lot of work to do. AJ's got a lot of pressure on them. They hired a good guy in Mike Schilt. Going to be a very, very interesting year. But if they don't get any pitching, they're going to be down there with the Colorado Rockies.
Coach knows all, tells all. Coach Quintero from San Diego, 97.3, the Fan. Longtime trusted voice in the San Diego, Southern California area. GCU has a really cool environment, John. Like, I can't give you, even back in the day when you and I would go bounce around to gyms, anything like what Grand Canyon has. It's an amazing facility. They've done well in the WAC. They have San Diego State coming here tomorrow night. Much anticipated matchup over here. We have the Final Four here in April this year. This is a kind of NCAA tournament feel to it. What's going on with San Diego State and Coach Dutcher?
Well, they're playing overall. They're 7-1. I mean, they're playing pretty good basketball. They got really tested last Friday night by UC San Diego. Brian Dutcher was nice enough to go over and play at Lion Tree Arena, which holds about 4,000, and the Tritons had him beat. If their big guy doesn't slip after a missed shot by Lamont Butler and he's able to block out Jaden Ledee, the Tritons walk out of their arena with a win the other night. But Jaden Ledee was able to get by the big guy when he slipped, had a put bat basket at the buzzer, and they eked out as a one-point victory. And they're not the powerhouse they were a year ago. They're a very, very good basketball team. They've got veterans on this team. They got a great kid that you saw with USC that I'm a big fan of, Reese Waters. He didn't play real well the other night, but he's played well. Jaden Ledee's averaging over 20 a game right now. Big, strong guy, about 6'9". He's their big guy this year, Brad. They, you know, probably the biggest loss they had was Nathan Mensah, their big center, 6'9", rim protector, could go out on the wing or out front. He could guard anybody. I mean, he was a fantastic defensive player, and guys could overplay, and guys would drive the bucket, and he'd be there to swat shots away. But they've got a very, very good team. Grand Canyon, I know, will be fired up, and that's what San Diego State's getting this year. They're getting every team that they play remembers them playing in the national title game against UConn, and they're getting everybody's best effort. This team, I will tell you, they're going to be in a real dog race for the conference title, but they're very well coached. They know how to execute late in the basketball game with a lot of the veterans they have on this team. But right now, it's still a work in progress with five games to go before conference play opens.
It's interesting, John, to hear that, because GCU, they played the other night down in Texas, Rio Grande Valley in WAC play. And there were 78 free throws shot. There were 56 fouls called. And GCU, I talked to somebody in the officiating world. They said the word on GCU is they like to be extremely, extremely physical and aggressive. How would that work against San Diego State tomorrow night?
Well, San Diego State is probably going to return the favor. I mean, they get in your chest as soon as you get off the bottom step of the bus. Mm-hmm. And they're going to play you hard. You know, probably, Brad, along with losing Mensa, and they do have a lot of guys that have played a lot of college basketball. They don't have the depth that they had a year ago. They got some really nice young pieces, but again, they've got some very nice young pieces. Miles Heidi, a big post player, definitely a work in progress. Miles Bird, a very, very talented wing, can play a little point guard. Jay Powell's a guy that transferred into the program. You know, Darian Trammell, who was a big part of this team a year ago, he's starting to come back and playing more minutes. And but a kid out of Arizona, Elijah Saunders, who's been a forward, big, strong guy, about 6'8", 245. He's actually dropped some weight and really looks good and has really played well. He'd been in the starting lineup the majority of the year, but Trammell had a right shoulder injury, and he really gives them a lot of ball handling out front. He also gives them some long-range shooting. So, you know, they're not as deep, but they're still very, very talented, just kind of missing that big guy right now to rim protect.
Kind of like me missing the big guy, John Quintero, being over here for 30 years. I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time as always. Thanks.
All right, Brad. It should be one heck of a basketball game.
We're back with more. Thanks to John Quintero. Back with more after this timeout.